The CFO Show is brought to you by Vena, the only complete planning platform natively integrated with Microsoft 365. With Vena, your finance and operations team can maximize your productivity and efficiency to deliver data and insights to your whole business faster. Vena lets your team use the Microsoft apps they already know and love, like Excel and PowerPoint, while giving your business the power of scale through a robust centralized database and AI capabilities. Learn more at venasolutions.com.
Welcome to the CFO Show. I'm your host, Melissa Howitson, CFO of Vena. In today's uncertain world, supply chains are no longer just operational, they're strategic. Geopolitical tensions, climate change, cybersecurity threats, and shifting tariffs are putting pressure on global operations and making resilience a top priority for finance leaders. CFOs are being called on to help their organizations navigate disruption, protect margins, and plan proactively. But how do you go from reactive firefighting to predictive, tech-enabled decision-making? In this episode, we explore what CFOs need to do to adapt to these turbulent times, how to recover when disruption hits, and strategies for disruption planning. Joining me is Nick McKeehan, Managing Director at Protiviti. With over 25 years of experience leading finance transformations, Nick brings a wealth of insight on how CFOs and their teams can lead through uncertainty and build smarter, more agile organizations. Nick, thank you for joining me.
Hey, Melissa. Thanks for having me here. Pleasure to be here.
So, before I jump into my questions, can you tell us a little bit more about Protiviti and what it is that you do there?
Sure. Protiviti is a global consulting firm. We help clients with business process, technology, risk and compliance, data analytics, transactions like M&A and IPOs, and internal audit. And my role is really to help CFOs at my clients transform their operations. And that could be just through pure business process transformation. But in most cases, we're trying to help clients adopt technology and enable processes to be more efficient, effective, take out cost. And then separately, I happen to focus on private companies that may be private equity sponsored that want to have an IPO at some date in the near future. And those clients require a lot more support and help to really mature their business, get their accounting to be public company ready, and so they can sustain audits and scrutiny from shareholders.
And so today we're going to be talking about supply chain and supply chain disruption. And how is it that your organization helps companies on this topic?
Yeah, great question. And I think right now it's on the forefront of everyone's mind. We help in a few different ways. On the CFO front, we're helping CFOs figure out how they can help drive the decision-making, the identification of risk and risk management, and work hand-in-hand with COOs and other operations personnel around what's going on in the supply chain, how it's impacting them, in particular, how it's impacting them from a financial perspective. So, for instance, on our side, my counterpart who would work with COOs, we'd be tied at the hip working together with our clients on these types of issues.
The global background is a little erratic right now from geopolitical tension, tariffs, economic uncertainty, lots of things that can definitely impact supply chains. How would you describe what all of this is currently doing to the way people are thinking about their supply chains?
Yeah, every year we conduct a survey of top risks. So we pull executives from companies across the world and ask them, like, what's on their mind? And supply chain risk is always at the top. And in particular, the last 5 years since COVID, it's been at the forefront of their thinking and what they're concerned about. And you mentioned a couple of them. So global conflict, that's a big area, right? We've had Russia and Ukraine going on for years now, but there's a lot out there that's bubbling just beneath the surface. There's talk about China and Taiwan. There's shipping supply lanes that have been attacked, and that's causing rerouting of product, especially if you're a distribution company. The tariffs, you know, that's kind of the next big wave, and they've already been raised as top risk by our clients. But now there's a lot of confusion on what the tariffs mean when they're going into effect. For instance, just last week, Customs had issued a press release about certain types of products being charged at a lower tariff rate than I think a lot of us expected. And that caused some back and forth, even with the White House, on what that means. Is that correct? So you can imagine, from our client's perspective, they're wondering, how is our product, you know, whether it's component materials or finished goods, how's that going to get through at the port, right? What's the what's the pipeline of clearance going to be for items coming in at the port? Is there confusion? Will that slow things down? Once the tariffs kick in, is it going to be harder? Are we going to see less flow of goods coming through the port? Likely going to see that, right? That's impacting pricing. So from a CFO perspective, how's that impacting margin? How much of that is going to get passed on to their customers? And then I'd say, kind of like building off that, there's a lot of concern about a potential recession. I think Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan have already increased their risk rating on the potential for a recession in 25. And a lot of our clients are anticipating that. And so what happens with that is you do tend to have pullback in spending. And so clients are more hesitant to invest than they would be in a hot market. Last thing, you know, and this is all happening at one point, but we're now heading into the season where you've got climate events. And I happen to work with a lot of manufacturing and distribution companies, and they're usually a big impact for climate events, you know, hurricanes, tornadoes, earthquakes, flooding, drought, right? There's any number of things that happen, and it typically starts around this time of year. And so you've got this piled onto all the other things we talked about. And then the last thing I'd say that my clients are concerned about is talent. So specifically in supply chain roles, there's been a real struggle to get talent and attract talent to take those types of jobs. And so all that together is creating a lot of challenges for companies.
With that backdrop, with what's happening around us, how would you define supply chain resilience in today's climate?
I tend to think about it in the context of flexibility and agility. And so when I sit down with a client and we're trying to understand how prepared they are or how resilient they are, I'll usually ask a series of questions. And the first question, and to me, the most important question, is how aware are you of the types of risks your company could face? Not necessarily what you have already experienced, but you know, you've got to be able to look around the corners to some extent. But what are you anticipating? What could impact your operations? And you really have to understand your operations. That tends to fall within the CFO's realm. Risk management is a big part of what the CFO drives. Now, as you start to fan out the types of risks that they're identifying, that's where you're working with the COO, CIO, CHRO, and so on. But knowing what those risks are and how you would address them, that's really important. The next thing I'd say is, how well do you know your supplier base? You know, and the supplier ecosystem. There's a video recently I saw, and I'd seen it years ago, but it popped up again on X, and it's Milton Friedman from 1980. And he's showing a pencil, and he's got the pencil, and he breaks down all the components of a pencil. Like, to us, we think of a pencil as pretty simple object, right? Take it, write it, you go pick it up at the store. It's pretty simple. But there's metal around the top that holds the rubber. There's the wood. There's the graphite that forms the lead. There's the paint on the outside. And each one of those items comes from a different country in most cases. And so your suppliers are fanned out across the globe in many cases. And they're in very different, you know, climate environments, geopolitical environments. So how well do you know your suppliers? And if any of them got impacted, how quickly could you move to adjust, right? Do you have backup suppliers? You know, how do you identify challenges in your supply chain? Do you have good data, good tracking? What kind of information do you receive from your suppliers? And then what's the financial impact of all that? So I try to get to the root, you know, of these types of questions. And if you could answer these questions affirmatively, you're probably in better shape than most. The one thing I'd wrap around that is you really have to have a strong leadership team with cross-functional collaboration. This isn't a CFO, COO, CEO only job. This is everyone on the senior leadership team is all hands on deck for these types of issues.
It's interesting that you say that because while I currently now work in software industry, which supply chain we look at a little differently than say manufacturing, I have worked in the automotive industry in the past, and I worked during a time when some of the largest automakers were going bankrupt. And as a supplier within that chain, that was a very interesting and stressful time. I learned some of the biggest lessons I've learned ever in business. And our company got through that moment by exactly what you're talking about, by pulling together our leadership and our ideas and saying, okay, you know, we can't control everything, but let's control the things we can. And, you know, what are the different ideas for how we might react here? How close are we to our supply chain and the ability to work with that supply chain to come together to get through this event that's facing us? And it was that coming together and some of the goodwill, I'd say, even that we'd built with our supply chain because we knew them so well. We had trust amongst the parties that we were able to come up with some different modes of operating temporarily. But on the other side of that, there were some companies that didn't make it through that. And we ended up thriving and growing so quickly because all of a sudden now the competition was diminished and the opportunities came roaring back and they needed people to deliver on that. But if we hadn't come together, like you were suggesting, it could have been a different outcome for that company as well.
Yeah, I tend to think about this in the context of your relationship with your suppliers and service providers. If you treat them like mercenaries, when times get tough, as you say, are they going to be there for you? Are they going to be willing to work for you? And then the other thing I think that you hit on that to me, most companies should be thinking about, it's easy to think about disruption and what's going on is we're trying to prevent bad things from happening or from getting worse and losing money. But there's a lot of opportunity there. You know, you just described it, right? If you can exceed where your competition falters, you're probably in better position to take some of that market share away from them. And so that's how you got to think about resilience and risk management. Risk management isn't just prevent bad things. It's, hey, we got to position ourselves to really take advantage of our competitive advantage, especially when they fall down.
Before we continue our conversation, I think this would be a great time to answer one of our audience questions. Make sure you stick around to catch the second half of our discussion. Here is our audience question. How can CFOs take a more active role in supply chain conversations without being supply chain experts themselves? Well, that's a good one because it can seem daunting sometimes when we have to jump into an area that we don't necessarily feel is our area of expertise. But in these kinds of situations, I think some of the principles that make for strong finance leaders apply here. We need to be curious. Let's ask questions. Let's lean into having the conversation with the supply chain experts so that we can better understand what it is they know, what they're seeing, and how we can help. It really comes down to honing those business partnership skills that matter for so many parts of our organization, where we may not exactly perfectly know the job, but we can bring our data, our finance acumen, our understanding of some of the bigger picture parts of the business to figure out how what we're seeing with our supply chain can be addressed by using some of that and supplementing the conversation. We don't have to be experts ourselves, but we do have to lean in and work with the rest of the business to find solutions through the problem. This is time for us to be an excellent business partner. From your vantage point, with all of the turbulence that's happening right now, how are some of the strongest finance leaders that you work with responding?
Yeah, they're under a lot of pressure right now and have been since COVID, I would say. I think COVID was sort of the triggering event for a lot of what's going on right now. And so I think companies that are waiting till now to start to do something are going to struggle. Companies that took the lesson from COVID and for our clients, the CFOs helping to drive the risk management efforts at their organizations, that's been really critical, because that risk management effort is going to help determine where you're going to allocate your capital. So if you're going to start to identify how you're going to bounce back or take advantage of what's going on in the marketplace from a supply chain perspective, you better have made sure you've got the investments in there. And those are not investments that pay back in 3 weeks, 6 months, or even a year sometimes. These are long-term investments, and they're about building sustainable processes. So the best CFOs that I'm seeing are really building that and doing that with their COOs, their CIOs, their CHROs. Again, thinking about the organization and being collaborative. And then I'd say leveraging technology. We've seen more CFOs work towards, how do we upgrade our technology? That could be an ERP, that could be some of the complementary tools, that's, you know, planning tools, like, you know, your company, for instance. How do you start to take advantage of those tools and that technology? Again, building competitive advantages. So the CFOs that we're working with are driving that. While at the same time, so if you take it to what's happening right now, tariffs, right? So if tariffs are going into effect and they're impacting the cost of your goods, how much of that are you going to pass on to your customers? How much of that might you be able to offset by taking out costs from the organization? You know, who's the CEO going to ask about that? They're probably coming to the CFO and say, where are my opportunities right now? Because passing that full cost onto the customer is going to be a really tough ask, and you're going to see a pretty significant impact. So, you know, what portion of that could we offset? And then one last thing, real long-term planning type item, but if you're, you know, predominantly offshore manufacturing and distribution, and maybe you do some assembly here in the US, is that sustainable for you? Is that the right model for you strategically? We've seen some companies start to look at, do they nearshore or onshore? And I don't think you're going to see onshoring fully where, you know, we take end to end, everything gets made here and assembled here. But you might see an uptick in companies doing more onshore manufacturing, but that really comes with technology investments. You're not going to do it with just bodies, right? So again, how do we afford that? Is that reasonable for us? Does that make sense financially?
Well, and on that topic of how do we afford this, are you starting to see some shifting in terms of how organizations are budgeting for the resilience and the planning, thinking of things differently when they're thinking about how to deal with the budget?
Yeah, I would say COVID was a trigger again. I think right now everyone's just kind of, I was speaking with a private equity firm, and one of the things they told me was, you know, right now it's like we're kind of paralyzed. We don't know what to do right now. So if you're waiting till right now, it's, I'm not saying it's too late. It's never too late to start, but it's going to be a lot more painful. What we've seen is, again, COVID is a trigger. Companies start to invest more in these resilience strategies. So think about production capacity. What's your ability to ramp up production quickly in advance of an event? Or what's your ability to recover quickly post an event? How do you beat sort of like deadlines? So think about what Apple just did. They airlifted a ton of iPhones. It sounds like a humanitarian event, but they airlifted iPhones right before the deadline for the new tariffs so that they can get those out and feed those out to their stores and satisfy customer needs before a potential price increase happens. You know, that doesn't happen because they just figured it out. That happens because they planned for that. They thought about the cost of ramping up production. What does that mean? What's the opportunity cost for us not to be able to do that and beat that deadline and get the products into the US right before the tariff increase goes into effect? So we're seeing that. We've seen, again, investment. You know, I call it, we tend to think of it in terms of business planning and analysis. And so that's thinking more holistically. And that tends to be driven out of finance, but work, you know, in close collaboration with the COO and operations folks. But how do you invest in some of these FP&A tools or BP&A tools, and how can they help you really start to think forward and get more data, more timely, more accurately? You know, instead of doing your annual planning process, you're doing something that's more real time and rolling. And many of these tools like yours, in fact, you know, use AI to gather that data and start to input those into models that can then be updated real time. And you have better information than you've ever had before. But it takes investment to be able to get the tool, optimize the tool, and leverage the full scope of capabilities of each of these tools so that you have a really good plan moving forward. And, you know, I think probably the last thing, if I had my supply chain expert here with me, one of the things they would talk about is the concept of digital twins and how do you start to model your current environment in a way that you could start to stress test it. So, you know, what if this happens? If this happens, what does this mean for us? How does this impact our ability to deliver for clients or for our customers? How does it impact production? What's the timeline impact on this? And these are really powerful tools. So our team on the supply chain side are really helping clients on the operations side build those models and optimize those. So that planning really supplements and pairs well with your risk management program.
You work across a number of different industries, different sized companies. Can you give us a few real world examples of how you've helped some of these companies to navigate through supply chain risks?
We've had many clients where we've helped them establish this digital twin concept and deploy that and actually take action based on that. So if, you know, these scenarios produce an output that would be catastrophic for the organization, well, that's a really good spot to invest in. So we've had clients that have been able to benefit from that. I have one example of a client, and this was actually pre-COVID. The CFO had asked us to come in and help them establish a risk management program. They were a private company. They weren't publicly traded. So it wasn't like there was some regulatory requirement that they needed to meet. They just really wanted to get their arms around risk management. You know, multi-billion dollar global footprint, three lines of business. So what we did for them was define what are the key risks? And those key risks, you know, range from cybersecurity, credit squeeze, economic downturn, but also supply chain risk. And that was a big part of it because that ripples through everything. So if you have that hit, you know, you're in trouble. And so part of that was, what are the scenarios? What are the ones that we care about? Let's put numbers to this. What's the magnitude? And also, how quickly does that hit? You know, there's a velocity component to these risks, and that could hit very quickly and shut you down. And so what we came up with was kind of like a top five list. These are the things that we need to talk to the board about. They did have a board, even though we're a private company. And what do we want to get investment for? And so one of the items in particular was on one of their lines of business, the way their manufacturing was structured was it was very segmented. So this plant produced these components, this plant produced those components, and so on. And then there was an assembly process at the end. And they didn't have a lot of sort of redundancy in that, but they identified, and we spoke with the insurance company that insured them for loss, about, you know, certain risks, and they were more climate related for some of these facilities, and one in particular. And so what they agreed upon was they'd build more redundancy across that network of manufacturing plants so that if one got taken out, they'd still be able to produce maybe not 100% of what they produced before, but some, you know, higher percent. You're never going to be able to recover 100%. You know, they thought about contract manufacturing. That really wasn't viable. It didn't make financial sense. So the answer was, let's build some redundancy. Well, fast forward 5 years later, roughly, one of their plants is right along a river. There's 100-year flooding that happens on that river, takes the plant out. Now, mind you, I live in an area just outside of Chicago that's experienced 100-year flooding twice in 5 years. So these 100-year floods don't seem to take 100 years to happen. 100-year flooding, but also wiped out, damaged a lot of the properties for the workforce, right? So we tend to think about something like that as impacting the plant, but all the people that work there, they're just as impacted. So that took the plant out for around 3 months. Because of the investments they made, they were able to shift that production, again, not fully 100%, but shift enough of it. Because if they weren't able to do that, it would have shut down that, it was three lines of business. That third line of business would have been shut down for roughly 6 months. That's when they got back to full production. So I think about that as, that's a really mature, long-term view on risk management and resilience that I think clients could take and say, you know, that's how we got to think about it. I can't think about the random, you know, event that might happen right now. I got to think about what could happen in the next 5 and 10 years.
And what do you think it is that differentiates those organizations that are able to get through it when a challenge presents?
I think those companies tend to have a similar DNA. They've got really strong leadership. Again, I think back to what you said about your company and that senior leadership team. That team's ability to get together quickly and make decisions and take action very quickly and get rid of the bureaucracy, that matters a lot, just as much as any other strategy or technology that you've got in place. If you've got a really strong leadership, tight leadership, and they should be the best friends. It's like the Avengers. And, you know, I saw the movie for the first time a few years ago, but, you know, I think about that. Like, how do they get together? They each have their skill set in place and what they're expert at. But they get together and they tackle a major problem impacting the organization. So can they do that? Is your organization really quick to adapt? How well are you incorporating technology? I think the best companies are on the forefront of technology adoption. And I know you've probably done multiple podcasts around AI, but the ability to leverage what AI can do, even in small bites, that matters. And that's what gives you the competitive advantage, in my opinion. So from the clients that we work with, those tend to be the attributes. You know, they're proactive. They also, you know, one of the things that we've seen clients doing more recently is I call surveillance. So how do they monitor their key suppliers? Not just, you know, who are their key suppliers, but how do they monitor what's going on in their world? That global footprint, you know, they could be in an area where companies are being nationalized, and like that, your key supplier is gone, right? On the customer side, how are they monitoring what's going on in their customer's world? We have clients where, you know, 50% of their business is tied up in 10 customers. And any one of those customers goes under, similar to your example earlier, they're in trouble, right? And so how do you monitor those events and not just looking at, are they paying, but what's the velocity of their payment? What news is out there about them? And that's where AI tools really come into play to help gather that, collect that information and provide you almost like a profile of your customer and your supplier and what's going on, where you should start to get concerned.
And you're touching there on tools and artificial intelligence. Where are key areas when it comes to technology that you see companies are maybe underinvested or behind when it comes to having those things in place?
I think companies have really struggled at, in my opinion, more of the predictive analytics side of the house. And again, that's where I think those planning tools come into play. I still see too many companies with the old school planning, manual process, Excel workbooks, share those around. They're not really gathering the data that they already have in most cases and using that to build a model for what they should be doing for decision making, right? So it's not like the model itself is going to be the decision. The model is going to provide you, the senior leadership team, with good information. So I don't think there's enough investment on the planning tools that are available to them, especially since now they incorporate AI capabilities in those. And then on the supplier side, there's a lot out there that helps you monitor those suppliers more effectively and get real-time data. Where is my inventory? Where are my products? What are the lead times that I now need to communicate on the customer side? And if I have that more real-time with my suppliers, I can do that more effectively. I can manage expectation. I can reroute. I can look at other suppliers or alternative sources of supply. And I think there's work that can be done there as well that I haven't necessarily seen enough invested in over time.
When you think about this topic of supply chain disruption, what do you think is the role of the CFO in this?
I really think the CFO has a critical role. I would put that the CFO on equal footing with the COO on this. I think obviously The COO is going to have all of the detail and knowledge of the operations itself. But every question still comes back to what's the financial impact? How are we going to fund this? How are we going to pay for this? What risk do we have on the revenue side? What's the impact to margin? So everything that we look at from a supply chain disruption comes right back to how are we going to get through this? And I think the CFO's organization tends to have the best data in the organization, right? They're dealing with data on a constant basis. They're producing information for leadership on a regular basis. So their ability to work hand in hand with the operations side of the house and identify and define what the problems are and how we're going to fix them, I feel like that's where they can really drive. And so I think about it, it starts with risk management. What is the risk out there? And so CFOs are great at that. Their organizations are great at that because they deal with a lot of regulatory compliance issues already. Even think about like cybersecurity. How many times do we now look at what's the CFO doing on cybersecurity, not just the CISO and CIO? So the CFO has really, you know, they tend to have the best talent, some of the best talent in the organization, a lot of responsibility, a lot of scrutiny. So they're kind of used to these challenges.
I agree with you. I think there's that joint responsibility. And I think that's where, you know, we have to lean into helping lead the charge when it comes. We may not do it ourselves, but we've got to step up and help provide some of that leadership. Because like you said, we do have the data. We have the risk-based approach to things. We're already thinking this way about things. We can help to align, connect the dots, figure out what we're going to do to budget or plan for it. What can we afford to do? So it's definitely not something where we can be just standing on the sidelines waiting and hoping for someone else to navigate through it. We're definitely an active participant, and I would say we need to lead the charge.
I would agree.
So what then is one trend or disruption that you think that companies are not thinking about?
So given that we deal with companies that have a global footprint, what I wonder about is how well-versed they are in the areas that they operate. So I talked about it a little bit earlier, but if you've got a supply chain and you've got production in, you know, outside of the US in hotspots where conflict has arisen, or again, where you've got sort of a nationalist approach that's been building up, and that's happening across the globe right now. There's a number of countries that have been places where US companies have had production or had supply from, where there's a lot of turmoil going on right now. I think it's important for companies, and I think the CFO can help lead the charge on this, but to really understand what is the risk in those countries that they operate in or they have supply in, and what does that mean for their supply chain and their ability to stay viable and produce product and sell product to their end consumer. And then conversely, and this is something that's more current and something I think companies got to think about right now, is with this tariff war that's going on, there's now an image of American made or American products that are being sold in some of the countries that are now fighting with the US on these tariffs. And so what's the impact of that? There could be a financial impact associated with that. You might see sales that were at certain levels in the past now decline, not only because of the tariffs, but now you've got this notion that we don't want to buy American products.
Nick, thank you so much. Such a timely topic. It's a relevant topic always, but definitely very timely. So appreciate your time today. Now, before we let you go, whenever we have a guest on, we do like to close out the episode with two rapid fire questions. So are you ready?
I am ready.
All right. The first one, what, in your opinion, is the hallmark of a mature finance organization when it comes to how they operate?
The best finance organizations are viewed as leaders in the company. They tend to have a really good talent, and that talent tends to move throughout the company. I've seen the best finance functions, they don't just keep their talent. They actually share that with the rest of the organization. They're change drivers. So, you know, I gave the example of my client who brought us in to help with risk management. They decided to do that. That CFO decided to do that. And that really was impactful for that organization. They're collaborative. So they don't just sit in the corner, you know, counting the beans, so to speak. They're out there. They're integrated with the rest of the organization working side by side, have really good relationships internally, and they're at the forefront of technology adoption. So, you know, if there's technology that they view that can benefit them and there's a good ROI on that, the best finance groups are looking for ways to take advantage of that.
Excellent advice. Now, if you could recommend just one book that has had the greatest impact on your life or your career, what would it be and why?
So one of the books that I read years ago, I think this was back in 2013 when it was published, is The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg. So I like to read psychological books outside of work because I think that helps us in what we do. Understanding how to work with others, what drives others, why do they do what they do? This book really helped me with that and understand why people have the habits that they have. And also, how do I develop good habits? So one example is I wanted to get healthier over the years, right? So what do I have to do? Obviously, I have to exercise and eat better. How do I exercise? I get up first thing in the morning, 5 a.m. and work out. I don't like it. It doesn't make me happy to get up and start working out. But the feeling I have after getting done, I feel like I got an energy boost. I'm clearer. And that sort of feedback loop of just getting up and doing the thing that maybe you don't want to do and just knowing that you have to do it every day, that's the habit that I've developed. And I do that at work as well. How do I interact with people? How do I evaluate my interactions with people? I have a process for evaluating that time and time again. And that's really helped me in my career, I think, in working with others.
Thank you for sharing that with us and also all your insights today. Really appreciate having you on the show today.
Thank you, Melissa. It's been a pleasure.
If you enjoyed this episode and want to learn more on this topic, sign up for our free newsletter with exclusive resources designed to help you grow your leadership skills and drive strategic transformation across your business. For the CFO Show, I'm Melissa Howitson. Until next time.